Hello and welcome to the Elsa Nerd Show, the show that's in beta right now, soon to be over at Galactic Netcasts. This will be filled in more neatly once we are actually on there, where we talk about everything that is on our nerdy little hearts. My name is Gregor Sprague, and joining me, as always, is Corey Scott. Corey, how you doing?
I've got ants.
Are they in your pants?
Maybe. I don't know. I'm refusing to look underneath the blanket right now. No, we just, the weather and stuff has kind of brought them up into our somewhat warmer than the outside household, and I'm trying to deal with it with all the different kinds of poisons and things that aren't going to hopefully harm my cats. But if you see me looking paranoid on the video feed, or if you hear me go a bunch of times during the audio, it's probably that, or, you know, something's itchy.
Itchy somethings. But no, so, hold on, I have to cough. Maybe I should take a cough drop for. Yeah, that's why I got him here. But no, so I am actually a little bit under the weather. It is more of the winter allergy crap that I get. It just took a couple months to get here because Michigan decided to have a late winter.
Everything's having a late winter.
Yeah. But this is the show, like I said, where we talk about everything, and I'm going to quickly mention something that I hinted at.
Hold up. We don't often do this, but we have a guest. And by guest, I mean a regular. But an irregular guest.
Yes, this is true. We have joining us both hosting he is both the Elsa Nerd Show and himself. It is Beatmaster. He is joining us on camera for our talk of Agent Carter. We're trying things a little differently here by having Beat run the starting and stopping the stream because my Mac is my Mac and problems like that. Sound a little bit like Dr. Seuss. But yeah, so Beat, how you doing?
I'm doing fine. I just messed up my right wrist and can't type. So I try with my voice and my face. There's that.
Yeah, he conveniently hurt his wrist, so he can't type. But no, it is great. It is great to have Beat on to where you guys could see. I just spit in my computer. Sorry. Where you guys could see. God, the ADD is kicking it so bad right now. But to where you guys get to hear and see what we normally get with just chat. But yeah, so real quick, and I want to hit on the latest DC animated movie called Batman Bad Blood, or basically what I like to call it. Batman, not really in there much movie, because Batman wasn't really in there. It does feature the same people playing Alfred, playing Batman, and playing Damian version of Robin. And it is, I don't think it's based on any real story, like any real, like how the Batman versus Robin was loosely based off of Court of Owls, or Justice League War was the New 52 intro or first book from the New 52 with Aquaman, stuff like that. It's just more of an interesting story, and the cinematic universe introduction to Batwoman, who was voiced by Yvonne Strahovski, if I have the voice acting correct in there.
Also the introduction of Batwing, right?
Yes, and Luke Fox's Batwing, which was cool to see, even if it did, and help me out with the comic book side of things, it did seem like, oh, hey, we need an Iron Man type person, and let's get Batwing in there. That's sort of what it seemed like a little bit with the movie.
Well, I mean, that may be the case with the movie. The thing is that Luke Fox wasn't the original Batwing in the comics, and the character was introduced more as the Batman of Africa, and when they changed the character over to a different person in the suit, I think it just became another person hanging around Gotham, in which case it becomes more like Bat-Iron Man. Yeah. Or Batman Beyond in the regular continuity as opposed to the future.
No, yeah. So this main story here is, it's very much around Batwoman, and you have her helping Batman. I'm using the air quotes here, and Batman air quote dies, and you don't. So that's where you don't really see much of him up until I want to say like the first half hour. You don't really see any of him. And there's some interesting ways that the characters are introduced in here, because we have characters like the Mad Hatter, Talia al Ghul, and the Heretic, he's in the New 52 that had killed Robin and it killed Damian Wayne. And it was like a clone of Damian Wayne or something like that, or something weird like that. But the Mad Hatter one was really interesting because he wasn't fully mad, like you would think of the Mad Hatter, like quoting Alice and all that. It was just more, he had his shtick, and his shtick was being like the Mad Hatter from Alice in Wonderland.
Which I find less interesting. That was one of the things about Jarvis Tetch, I think was his name, was that the Alice themes and everything that he did weren't necessarily so 100% important to what he did, but the Mad Hatter portion of it was the hat, the controlling people with it and everything. So it's
that part was still there. That part, okay. Like he has a hat, and it's more technology focused with him controlling people than, like, I don't know however they do it in the comics, really. But you have, and it's a cool setup because it's like four briefcases that come up into computers and stuff, and then there's this like crane game style thing that goes and clamps on around the hat to where then it's like, excuse me, his thoughts go into the hat, which are then broadcast out to everyone. And it is cool. That part is cool. I really enjoyed that part because it was new and different. And not just the, like I've seen on other versions of him where he's just like this bumbling idiot murmuring about Alice and whatnot. He was more of just a lackey. I will say, because I've hit on this with the other DC animated movies, this is not exactly a kid-friendly one. Now, this isn't Batman Assault on Arkham, where it's like, okay, we're going to make an adult, gritty animation or cartoon for adults, but it's not Batman the Animated Series, where, hey, your kids can sit down and enjoy this show, sort of thing. There is some swearing, there is some explosions and people exploding and stuff like that. So there is that warning for your parents and people who like to watch movies with like younger relatives or whatnot. This one might not be one you want to do.
And they're also, the rumor is right now that they're planning on doing of the animated version of The Killing Joke is also going for an R rating. And that's going to have, I mean, that's got the classic voices of Kevin Connolly and Mark Hamill, which, like we talked about last week with the Deadpool aspect of Deadpool's an R-rated film, but Deadpool's been pitched in such a way that it makes sense that people who've seen him in PG-13 and even G-rated stuff are going, well, why can't I see the new Deadpool? It's going to be confusing to people who can watch the other Batman cartoon series to then say, well, why can't I see this new one that, you know, has the same people who did the voices from the cartoons that we've been able to watch that were aimed for kids?
But also, though, Kevin Conroy was the voice of Batman in Assault on Arkham.
Yes. So, I mean, again, it shows a problem that, I mean, I want him to get the work. I want him to be the voice of Batman. I don't necessarily feel connected to the different people that they choose to be the voice. But that's just because I have an expectation now. But it's just, it's confusing to the audience, to the potential audience, as mm-hmm. to who is this for, you know, and how well do they market that way, and how well do they divide the two things that they're marketing for?
Yeah. But yeah, so Batman Dead Blood.
To add is Nightwing character. Was he used in animations before in movies?
I don't think so. He's, like I said, this is the Luke Fox version. So you see,
are you talking about Nightwing or Batwing?
Nightwing. Oh, I was talking about Nightwing.
Nightwing. Yeah, Nightwing's in. I want to say he's in Under the Red Hood. He's in the last. He's in the last Batman one, which I can't think of the name of right now. And he's in, I think he's in quite a few other animated ones, but he's been more of a background character, and this movie seems to me like they're setting up a possibility of the Bat family, of truly establishing the Bat family, where you have Dick Grayson, you have Damian Wayne, you have Jason Todd out there somewhere. Hopefully he'll be voiced by Neil Patrick Harris again. And you have, you know, Batwing, and you have Batwoman out there, and then you have at the end, and not really spoilers because they put it on YouTube, but you have Batgirl, Barbara Gordon, as a college student, you know, the Batgirl of Burnside. And that to me screams like they do want to do this where they're branching out to where, you know, you get some of the people and, you know, some of the characters, and it'll be more family friendly, or like where one movie will be gritty, another movie can be, you know, more kid appropriate. I'll put it
which makes no sense at all.
Yes.
You know, go back and forth. It's like, okay, I got this Batman movie and I could watch it, and then the next one's out and I can't watch that one. But then the one after that, maybe I can watch.
But it's they're doing it in a way where it's not, or I feel like they could be doing it in a way where it's not like you're telling an overarching story. It's just they're establishing new characters in here, more with Batwoman and Batwing, and then establishing a little bit more with Nightwing as well. And this is why I'm emphasizing the fact that it's the Batgirl of Burnside, because that was a big change to go from Gail Simone's super serious, in a lot of ways very depressing Barbara Gordon, to what we have now that was started with Cameron Fletcher and Babs Tarr, with, you know, fun, like finding her fun, finding her smile again, Batgirl, and doing things outside of Gotham, even if it is just essentially a borough over from Gotham City sort of deal. That's sort of where I'm going at with this, where I could see them doing, you know, a story based on this version of Batgirl, and it being more kid appropriate. But then I could also see them doing the Killing Joke, and I could see them doing Forever Evil, or, you know, whatever, you know, insert the big super heavy adult thing that might not work well for kids, event thing that happens in the Bat books.
What about Batman Incorporated?
Batman Incorporated, or I was just thinking Batman Endgame that they just had with Joker, which killed Batman. Oops, sorry, spoilers for the comics.
Damn you. No, but I was asking for Nightwing because that part I saw, I prepared for the show and thought I'll watch it as well. And the Nightwing part was done as in the early parts of his solo comics, that he was always moaning, I'm not Batman, I'm my own man. And that the whole hour was a little bit tiresome, but when it's the first time they used him in this role, then it's okay, because that has to be established. But if it was already done, it seems a little bit gratuitous.
They hadn't really established the whole him as Nightwing going, I'm not Batman, you know, I'm not, you know, him stepping out of the shadows. It was just, he was there. Like, you know, there is that history, much like with the New 52, they hit on the fact that Barbara Gordon was shot, that part of Killing Joke is continuity and all that stuff. But they don't hit on, you know, like, they don't hit on it in any other way, sort of deal. To where, it's not like, oh, you guys got to remember, I was shot in the back. It's like a passing mention of a nano exosuit sort of thing that helps her walk. And then it mentioned first in the beginning of the books, but then it's just like sort of passing common knowledge sort of deal. And same thing with Nightwing, like it. When he was, I think he was introduced in the movie Under the Red Hood, and you had a little bit of, oh, hey, this is Dick Grayson. Now, oh, hey, here's another Batman, or here's another former Robin sort of deal. And in the movie, they did have a little bit where he's like, I'll never be in the suit. And you could tell there is a reason why he didn't want to be Batman. He was only doing it because they needed a Batman in there. And as soon as they, again, spoilers for the movie, but as soon as they rescue Bruce Wayne, he's like, I was almost half expecting him to be like, here, and start stripping off the stuff and have the Batwing costume underneath, or not Batwing, Nightwing costume underneath, and then dress up Bruce Wayne like right there and then. But yeah, that is Batman Bad Blood. It's a good one to check out. It's available on all the streaming purchase places like iTunes Store, Google Play. I think it's available on Amazon through their marketplace as well. And it'll be available on Blu-ray and DVD in a couple of weeks, I believe. So next, I want to talk about something that Corey, we watched last week, and we just didn't really have time to get to it, and that is Shadowhunters. This is the new ABC Family, no, sorry, Freeform show based off of the books The Mortal Instruments. So what are your thoughts on Shadowhunters?
I had no knowledge of the Mortal Instruments. I knew that they had a movie that came out a couple of years ago that apparently did not do very well while they were trying to launch all the Twilight and Maze Runner and Divergent and Hunger Games books into films. That was another one. Vampire Academy, I think I reviewed on here a while ago. That was something else that popped up. So I just lumped it into like the big mass of teen book to films, and it just didn't seem to catch. I don't know why I decided to watch Shadowhunters, but for some reason, I think I was going to try to watch that in Shannara, and I wound up taking all the Shannara off my DVR because it was just filling up too much.
Because you want to see Deathstroke as Deathstroke, not as some post-apocalyptic yet pre-medieval fighting guy.
No, because I really didn't care for Deathstroke on the CW series, so I could give a rat's ass. No, it was just recorded twice in a week, and the second episode was like a discussion episode, and I had no idea, so I thought I had episode 2 recorded, but I didn't. It was some other BS, and I just finally was like, well, this is some crap. But as far as Shadowhunters, it feels very typical ABC Family, which is now, like you said, it's now Freeform. It feels at the same level of a Pretty Little Liars, which I've seen some of because my wife got really into it for a while. And that's not a bad thing. You know, it's certainly not quite up to the par of a CW show, but it's close. And a lot of these are make or break based off of who's in them, who's who the character's being played by and stuff, and how well do they write their interactions together. And in this regard, it's reasonably solid. It does have the guy from the Old Spice commercials.
Yep, Isaiah Mustafa is in there. The girl, the main actress for like the longest time, I kept going, okay, she looks so freaking familiar. Where have I seen her from? Like I know I've seen her in other things. And I realized she was in the MTV series Happy Land, which only lasted for a season, was enjoyable, but wasn't exactly, oh, we gotta have like we gotta have more Happy Land here. And where she did play a good sidekick, it is nice to see that she plays a very competent main character as well.
Yeah, she seems to go from zero to acceptance pretty fast. And then they also do the biggest jump they can to get her into tight clothes and leather knee-high boots as possible, which they make a joke about. It's like she borrows the clothes from the only other like girl in the group, and they're like, well, she's very comfortable with her body. And she's like, okay, and we just happen to wear the same size, I guess, because there is no room for acceptance in those clothes of like, no, I'm a little outside this. Nope, not in these. You're not. You're in there and you're not getting out. The main guy is just your stereotypical like handsome, good at everything, Marty Sue. Kind of dude,
I
and
love that.
but the other people around him, like there's some hint that the other guy that's part of the group that are like his adopted family, like the girl and guy are brother and sister, and then the main guy has lived with them since his dad was killed as a kid. There was some sort of a hint, like maybe that other guy has got a crush on him, but has never let him know about it, because he's very disapproving about this new girl coming in, and the sister says something like, you know, are you just not comfortable with your feelings for him? And they blow past it, but I'm like, oh, that would be kind of interesting.
I didn't even pick up on that.
Yeah, and then she's got her best friend who's hanging out with them and is the damsel in distress, except it's the little nerdy dude, who is we'll just call him the Cisco of the show, and he's of course got the big crush on her, but as soon as he sees the other girl that's part of the group and she's all way flirty with him and stuff, he's like, I think I'm gonna be okay over here. You guys go ahead and do what you're gonna do.
Well,
I'm gonna check out with hot comfortable with her body mama over here.
no, talk about, he was a nerd with a six pack. That's the one
Well, I mean,
difference. He
aren't
showed
they all?
him with his shirt off just to show even he is a CW figure, more or
Yeah,
less.
I mean, it's like the Barry Allen Flash. It's like, oh, Barry Allen shows up in Central City and he's just CSI guy and he's kind of nerdy and he's perfectly typed for Felicity. And by the way, they're both models. You can't disguise the fact that they're both basically models and they have abs galore and whatever else. But no, but they're the nerds of that town. I rewatched Not Another Teen Movie the other day, and it's got Charlie Lee, who plays a sister on Supergirl, and Captain America is in it, and a lot of people are in it. But there's the point where they go to the prom, and the two couples are both dancing at the same time, and then everybody else is dancing around them. And Ted from How I Met Your Mother is there. He goes, "Yeah, you would never guess that every kid who goes to this school is a professional dancer on the side." Because the whole big dance scene is just like all intricate and everything, and it's like that's not how kids dance. But in this school, yeah, that's the throwaway line, is that no, they're all professional dancers. And in CW and Freeform World, they're all professional models that just happen to be regular teenage kids who, on their 18th birthday, suddenly disappear into the night with the vampire and werewolf people.
I don't know. I just knocked over Heisenberg here. Sorry. Sorry, I've been trying to get Harvey Dent up and running again and get my desk sort of reassembled. Hadn't exactly worked. And also figuring out that, oh, hey, I get more hours tomorrow because I'm switching shifts with someone and all that stuff. Hooray! I'm with the show. I enjoyed it, but I think I've mentioned it before. I have this, I don't want to say weak spot, but I enjoy the ABC Family Now Freeform TV shows that they air. Like, I watch The Fosters. Actually, I think I need to watch because it premiered on Monday. And Switched at Birth. And there was another one. Oh, Chasing Life. Those shows I would watch and just enjoy them and not really be like, hey, whatever, I don't care. You won't come at me, bro? So what do I do? I'll watch chick flicks. I can cry. I can get with my feelings. So what do I do? And, you know, it's like, what? So I enjoyed this just because, you know, hey, it seems like this is a good fit for ABC Family. This does seem like it's going to hit, or sorry, Freeform. It does seem like it's going to hit the Pretty Little Liars crowd. It also seems like it's going to hit or bring in new people because it seems like everyone's doing these TV shows based off of books now because we like based off young adult books because we have this, we have the Shannara Chronicles. I want to say there's another one out or coming out soon that's like this as well.
Well, Magicians is just about to start on Sci-Fi, which looks like it's aimed a little bit older. But that's the thing is like, 12-year-olds shouldn't necessarily be watching Game of Thrones. But the ideas and the fantasy and all of the other stuff that comes in from that, it seems like that's kind of a universal theme that every age should get to have and enjoy. And when you're younger, it's Harry Potter. And then you move up to things like The Maze Runner and The Mortal Instruments, and then you move up to what they're planning on doing with Magicians, it looks like, and then you move up to Game of Thrones, and you see Theron Greyjoy get his dick cut off. I hope I don't see that in Harry Potter. But I don't know. Poor Hagrid. It's a perfectly serviceable show. Mm-hmm. I watched the first episode, and then I was like, okay, and my DVR is like, hey, I can play the second episode for you right now. Well, really? You know, and it hadn't even played on the air yet. It was just kind of, they were trying to get people into it. And so I said, sure, you know, I'll give it a go.
Yeah, that's been the interesting turn of events with TV shows is let's air the premiere and then at least one extra episode. Like, they expanded the first four. there was a couple other ones that did like the first four or five episodes.
Tribeca did the whole series for 24 hours. They played it a couple of times, and now they're playing
it. They played it three times, I believe, is what got through.
Yeah.
And even then, I didn't see all of it. I enjoyed it. It's dumb fun, is how I will describe Andrew Tribeca. But yeah, I mean, it seems like that's how how the TV channels are going to dip their toes into the Netflix model. Like, where you get a little bit of binge, but then you go to, but then it's, nope, you gotta wait week by week if you want to do it. Sort of deal.
Well, I have to say, I like that model a lot more than Fox playing the premiere of their show at 10 p.m. Oh, no, just kidding. Court people, we're playing it at 10:30. Well past you've already gone to bed, and good luck catching it before the next episode starts tomorrow, you dumb fucks.
Yeah, what show could you actually? Hey, that's brilliant. Okay, I'm taking the segue here. I'm taking the segue
right off the cliff. Oh, no, that's
yes, no, while doing, I'm gonna do an ad while having like a allergy thing here going on. Because we have an ad. This is more of us. If you want to support the show, hey, elsnerdshow@gmail.com or mail@elsnerds.com.
Or send antihistamine to Gregor Sprague at Michigan.
I will gladly accept. No. I shouldn't say that because it might not be antihistamine. But no, so we have an ad here because we're going to mention our good friend Sean Burns. You know him as the head guy over at for Trivia Geeks. He has a sorry, excuse me. It's like dry here right now.
It doesn't sound like you are, but yeah. So Sean Burns, who does Trivia Geeks podcast, introduces the new I'd App That podcast. I think is just about to come out, and it's got a couple more with his other podcast studio. I want to say it's Wolfgang Studios. I'm sorry, Sean. I don't remember. I should have written that down. But just this week, he has been able to introduce the podcast he does with his son, Exploring the X-Files. They were recording episodes over the summer for the original series, and they got about 6 episodes in, but then they wanted to wait and launch the show along with the new season of X-Files that's playing on Fox, this special miniseries. So he and his son has never really watched the X-Files aside from those 6 episodes before, and of course Sean was a big fan in college and going on. They're doing this together, and they do an episode, a show. The first one lasts about an hour, and I was listening to it on the way home at 1.5 times speed so I could try to get as much of it done before I got back here. And it's really good. I mean, Sean does a professional-sounding podcast, you know, nothing like this. And he and his son have some very interesting things to say about the show. They go into some of the trivia about it. They go into the backstory of some of the actors and the characters and stuff, and they connect things really well. And they start doing scenes from the show where they play a little bit of dialogue and give you a little bit of exposition as to what was happening in that scene. It's very well done and very informative. And if you're an X-Files fan, I think it's a great thing to jump into, and it may give you the excuse to go and rewatch the series again if you haven't seen it for a while. Or at the very least, listen to the first 6 episodes that are all going to be about this new series while they're doing it. They've already recorded the episode for the second one, so that'll probably be hitting the air, I'm guessing, probably tomorrow or something, because they did the first episode the day after it came out.
Yeah. I'd imagine that would be what they're doing. But yeah, check out, what is it, Exploring the X-Files?
Exploring the X-Files podcast. It is on all your favorite podcatchers. You can find it on iTunes. You can find it on Stitcher. Although Stitcher didn't seem to have the new first episode out. They had the prequel episodes going, so that will probably hit a little bit later on. I found it through Dogcatcher.
Yeah, Stitcher should be updated by now. Stitcher has this weird thing of like, oh, we're going to update right away, but then not really. Sort of deal. But anyways, so this... shut off, tablet? Alright, whatever. I get distracted way too easily, and you see your tablet on, and you're like, okay, let's shut this bad boy off, but it don't want to do that. So I want to hit really quickly on Flash and Arrow, because I don't think there's too much more we could hit on with the two shows, because the big dog sort of came in here with Legends of Tomorrow. I want to devote more time to that. So we have some slight continuation on with Arrow. Felicity's in the hospital. Hopefully, going to survive surgeries and survive the assaults and all that stuff. We still don't really know who dies, sort of deal. I did hear one theory from a friend of mine, and I'm like, oh, yeah, didn't even think of that.
Well, the theory, I think commonly, is that the two people that it would either be Lance, Detective Lance, or Felicity's mom. And when you see the end of this episode, when Oliver walks from the grave over to meet Felicity in the limousine, and the way that she acts, it feels pretty much like it's going to be her mom, who is right now developed a relationship with Detective Lance.
Yeah.
So it's almost too obvious, mm-hmm. but I don't know what else they could do, how many other characters they'd be willing to sacrifice at this point.
Yeah.
In the show, it seems like we lose a mainstay of the series at least once a season, and I don't know that that's something that we're just going to keep going through characters. The Felicity thing, obviously, is they're also, she is currently not able to walk, and that is part of what the surgeries are finding out, is that she's probably going to be paralyzed for the foreseeable future, and commonly people have said, well, they're saying that she may be the Oracle for the Arrow TV series. Since Oracle is a character that doesn't exist anymore in the DC universe, since they didn't actually explore that route with Barbara Gordon in the New 52.
Yeah. And all I have to say with that is, oh, darn, Felicity's going to have to wear those tight little skirts sitting in a wheelchair now.
Yeah.
I mean, that's honestly, like, every time you see Felicity doing some hacking stuff, she's doing it in this, like, tight dress, and it's like, really? Just throw on some jeans or something.
Telling you, man, CW nerds, they are the hottest. And it's okay. I mean, it's fine. One of the reasons the character is so popular is because people are into her. People think she's attractive. But we liked her when she was the sort of mousy nerd. You didn't have to beautify her up or anything, but she is a very beautiful lady.
Yes. And
they do that with all of the characters on the show. You know, there's nobody. The guys are all showing off their arms or taking off their shirts. The Oliver shirtless ad that appeared on every comic, like every excuse that they had. Here's an Arrow ad, and here's a different picture of Oliver without a shirt on. Looks the same, except, you know, maybe you see he's a little more cut in this one. And then they did one with Diggle, which I thought was both awful and terrific at the same time. It's like, really, we just got to see the next guy without a shirt on? But on the other hand, fuck yeah, Diggle, go for it, man.
Yeah.
Talking about Diggle and his relationship with his brother currently, seems a little bit over the top. I don't know. I'm not buying it entirely.
What part aren't you buying? That he would go, that he'd be, you know, Commander Hardass on him? Or the end part where, all right, I was just in here torturing you, trying to beat the answers out of you. Now let's play a game of a five-card draw or whatever they were playing.
No, that wasn't the issue. It's more the relationship in itself. It's the only parts and pieces we get from in each episode, so it looks a little bit disjointed, but I didn't get the feel of the relationship and didn't buy it in this case. Not the beating down and everything else. That's part of comics, isn't it?
Yeah, well, no, absolutely. I completely agree with you, because we go from Diggle has been, his entire reason for being has been trying to find out what happened to his brother and get payback for his brother dying, you know, because of the interactions we've had with Deadshot and everything. And then as soon as it turns out that his brother is actually alive, no relief at all. It's just, oh, that asshole, I'm going to lock him in a cage in the basement, and then I'm going to eventually start beating information out of him. And it just, you're right, it feels disingenuous. It's like, this is the thing that we wanted to get to on the show, and how do we integrate it with the storyline with Damian Dark? Well, this is how we'll do it. We'll make him one of Dark's mindless soldiers who's completely following him. And it's like, well, that doesn't sound anything like the character that we've been had described to us. Now, you can misjudge somebody. You can have your blinders on when it comes to your family. But if you have those blinders on, then your reaction when you find that person alive that you thought was dead is not punching them squaw over and over again. It's you have some levels that you go through. And it just didn't seem like those were explored.
No, yeah. But no, so I mean, yeah, I see that. So, and then Flash, they're exploring more of, you know, with Professor Zoom. I am intrigued at how they're going to do with bringing in Reverse Flash. Like, which, and it seems like it's almost like the Reverse Flash from a different Earth, I want to say. Like, it's the same Reverse Flash, but in the same aspect that it's the same guy who did it, but I don't think it's the same one from last season.
Well, it's the same actor,
Yeah, no,
I'm pretty
same
sure.
actor. Same actor, but much like how we got Harrison Wells being played by Tom Cavill or Tom Cavanaugh last season, and we got him this season being played basically because he's the
He's
Earth
the Earth
2
Two
version.
Harrison Wells. So
Yeah.
is the Earth Two guy from the future coming back in the past and just winding up jumping Earths at the same time? One thing that I saw in the preview is when they talk about it, they say we're basically in his origin. So maybe it's not even that he's from a different Earth. Maybe it's just earlier in the timeline for him than when he started doing all the other stuff, going after Barry. And how do they? Can they change things? Do they want to change things? What happens at that point?
This is too much timey-wimey shit. Man, this is Doctor Who shit here.
Welcome to the fucking comic books, man.
No, I
That's the
know.
whole deal. We have a show that, yes, has introduced us to parallel Earths and has introduced time travel, both to a series, and has done things with time travel that has affected both shows. Even though Arrow is a separate show, stuff that's happened on Flash has affected Arrow directly in that regard. And now we've got a third spin-off show that we'll talk about in a minute that has even more timey-wimey stuff. It's either all or nothing on these, so you have to be careful in how you use it. But to say, oh, well, it exists and we can access it, but we're not really going to do anything with it, would almost seem more disingenuous.
Yeah. I can't remember who the villain was this week on Flash.
This week it was the turtle.
Oh yeah. Now is the Turtle an actual DC Comics character?
The turtle is a DC Comics character. It's not a well-known one. It's certainly not a popular one, but and I can't tell you a lot about the character to see in relation to how they utilized him on the show.
Yeah.
The putting his wife into a status of not living, not existing anymore, but not being quite dead either, and freezing her, and then wanting to do that to Patty, which didn't make a lot of sense, was different. And it was, again, it was an introduction of a character to meet an end with the storyline. It's like, okay, well, we need to figure out what to do with Harrison Wells and how they're going to defeat Zoom. So they introduced this character at just the right time to go, oh, now we can do this thing, or maybe we'll be able to utilize him to do this. And Wells goes full over to the dark side in the regard of he gets the turtle out of his jail, which was weird again, because here's a turtle conscious looking at you. You open up the cell, you walk in, he doesn't do anything, and then you just shove a thing up his nose. So he doesn't defend himself at all and doesn't use his powers at all. But then you steal whatever it is out of his brain matter and leave the door open on your way out. Just like,
Because I think
God
he
damn it,
killed
Wells, close the fridge when you're getting the milk out.
him. No, because I think he killed him when he did that.
Yeah,
Oh,
piece of brain
I'm
went into the tube.
yeah, it was not like a, oh, I'm gonna be okay after this kind of thing. Now, he may be just catatonic and not necessarily dead, but it was not gentle. And again, leaving it open there, there's so little explored on what those cells actually are and how these people survive in them. So they put these people in these cells in this laboratory. Remember, this was a laboratory. It wasn't built as a jail. So they put them in these magic cells that takes their powers away and is supposed to keep them locked up, unless someone goes and lets them out later, and then forget about them. Wonder if they're being fed. Wonder if they need to be fed. Wonder if they're just existing in essentially solitaire, which is completely screwed up. And we don't really understand the process of that to be able to say, well, now Wells just kind of killed this guy maybe and left him in the cell. Is somebody gonna find the turtle later on and go, why he dead? Here's your lunch. Why are you bleeding out of your face? I don't know. That's the holes that the show has, and that's the suspension of disbelief that you have to kind of like glance over to be able to keep watching.
No, yeah. I mean, I complain about the time travel stuff, but that's still to say that I'm a fan of it because, you know, again, I am a Doctor Who fan. You know, I full well enjoy it, and it's like, and right as I said that, I'm like, wait a minute, it's sort of like a River Song Doctor thing that we're getting with Reverse Flash, like we had his ending, and now here we're getting closer, if not his beginning, closer to his beginning with Reverse Flash. But the reason I asked about the turtle is because isn't, I want to say, Professor Zoom's power like that a little bit in the comics?
Stealing the speed away?
Is it stealing the speed away?
As far as I remember growing up, Professor Zoom's power was essentially just like the Flash, as they just both ran fast. Later on, when they brought in the new Zoom, I think he did something where that character was trying to make Flash better and faster and more powerful. He was trying to encourage him, but by doing crimes and killing people to make him do it. And I'm not 100% sure how his powers worked in that regard, and if it was a stealing things away. If he wanted to be faster so he could steal his speed, that may have been the case. I didn't pay too much attention to that storyline.
Just what I thought is the Speed Force. He takes away from the Speed Force from other speedsters, and the turtle took away the kinetic energy or something like that moving. The bullets that went against him dropped.
Yeah.
So yeah. It's a different kind of stealing power. That shows my two cents to
that. No, that makes sense. That makes sense, honestly. I only asked it because it's like, I think it's either Zoom or Reverse Flash. I can't think. I know they just did it in the comic books where it's like, but it is, that is the difference, is the Speed Force, like where the one is the opposite. So he's really just more slowing down around him, slowing things down around him. Where the turtle is just taking the kinetic energy away.
Yeah, and there's been a few different speedsters that have shown up from the Speed Force or from different points in time in the Wally years, including Cobalt Blue and some other ones. And one of those, like the Black Flash or something, may have been the guy who was stealing people's speed. I know there was somebody who was basically, it was like he was Death. He was a Black Razor kind of an ego, and he'd steal somebody's speed to the point where they died. I think that's what happened to Johnny Quick and maybe even a Max Mercury, who was the guy who trained Bart Allen how to be Impulse and then later on Kid Flash. Yeah. So this idea has definitely existed. It's just how they're playing it out on this. I will say, overall, with this episode, I was just really bummed to see Patty go.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, especially because it seemed like there was more that you could get out of her, like more that could happen, and she's like, "I'm out, homie." It's her deal.
Well, it's still that thing of, well, Barry has to moon for Iris, just like in some way or another, Oliver is supposed to moon for what is it? It's not Dinah anymore. I can't even think of it. Laurel.
Laurel.
And I just. I'm not a big fan of how they do that. I'm not a fan of how they set up the show that way, and this eternal beloved kind of thing, which they've already done with Hawkman and Hawkgirl, but at least it makes a little bit more sense there. That is sort of the crux of their characters. But I really like Patty. I wanted to see Patty stick around. I like the actress. I think that she brought a brightness to the show. I am not really in love with what they've done with Wally so far, which seems in line with what they're doing with the current version of Wally in the new 52 universe. That's not my Wally West, and it has nothing to do with race. So let's nip that in the bud right now. It has everything to do with character, and Wally as a character is just very different from what they've been trying to do.
Yeah, and even then, like, I don't mind the character in the new 52 universe version. Or the post-Flashpoint, whatever you want to call it now, universe. The reason why I don't like him in this is because in that one, it's like, okay, he's mad at the Flash. He has a distinct reason to be mad. And here, it's just more like, I'm doing things to survive, blah, 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 bullcrap thing. And then, okay, you come in, Joe, and you're saying you're going to be my dad, and I'm going to be mad at you instinctually. It's like, it seems a little fake to me.
Well, that's CW drama. And CW drama, yeah. I expect that out of. And I don't have a problem with that character interaction and the way that they handled it by the end of the episode. Now, I'm sure it'll go backwards and forwards and backwards and forwards many times, because it's not like it's going to be one week that it just works itself out. But I still just, why does it have to be Wally West then? You know, is this characterization necessary to put that character's name to it? And that's, I have the same problem with what they've done with Donna Troy in the New 52. I have the problem with a lot of characters in the New 52 where they just seem totally unlike themselves from any incarnation that they've had before. So,
well, maybe you'll like the new relaunch.
For somebody that hasn't seen the 52, so my Wally West, the Troy Garrick we see is more the Wally West I remember, with being that joyful and everything. Mm-hmm. And Barry Allen, sorry. Barry Allen was more a hard ass, as I recall it. So it changed it up in a way that I don't see Wally West being represented any way it was before. But maybe the new 52 gives a new direction, but I don't see it being an advantage, because the character as it was already great.
Yeah, I mean, they brought Barry back and tried to make him younger and more hip, because Barry was always pretty just kind of straight-laced and wasn't super interesting as Barry. I mean, The Flash was cool because it was The Flash, but emphasizing things like, okay, he's a CSI guy and doing those things, it started out with him being essentially a cop. It improved some of the things that were Barry-like, but they wanted to make him appear younger and cooler so that people would like Barry. And to do that, they had to de-emphasize any connection to Wally. Now, Wally, over the years, had gone from being the kid partner to being the actual Flash, growing into that role, accepting the fact that he was as much a hero as Barry ever was, getting married, and then eventually having kids, and his kids kind of becoming superheroes as well. So they had gone through this whole tale of Wally's life, much like I feel with Dick Grayson. Is I grew up with Wally West. I grew up with Grayson going from Robin and Nightwing and everything too. But then to make Barry work, they had to kind of wreck or completely get rid of Wally West. And that's okay, but if you're going to bring Wally West back in, then start with the young Wally West that becomes a kid partner. But do it with the values and stuff that he had, and don't make him like a street tough, which is essentially really bad, is that we've introduced this new black character that's taking over the role of this white character, and then we're also going to make him a criminal. And it's like, that's not really great. I mean, like, yeah. It's not the only characteristic of the character. I want to emphasize that. He's not like he's like going around and joining gangs and stuff. But it is kind of bad that you introduce a new African-American version of a character and automatically go the criminal route, which I in the comics as well. Now, yeah, it's a great redemption turnaround to have him become a hero, but still, maybe not your best focus.
So, we've talked time travel, so we have to talk Legends of Tomorrow. Because this again, I feel like was the strongest premiere pilot episode from the Berlanti, for lack of a better term, the Berlanti-verse of shows out there. I enjoyed this the most out of all the pilots, you know, comparing this to The Flash and Supergirl and Arrow. I really enjoyed this one.
Let's be fair though. Let's take it back to what it is. And that is that when
it's a spinoff, yeah.
Yeah, it's a spinoff. It has all of the ability to pull off of from what the shows and things that it built out from before it. So all of these characters we know from other things, and we get to just go in full steam ahead. It's like the Avengers movie. The Avengers movie worked really, really well, and it felt like, oh, this is so different from everything I've seen before. But it had the advantage of having these, you know, four or five other movies that all led into it, to get you set up as it started. And that's what World of Tomorrow has, which is smart. I mean, that's basically, we have Arrow, we have Flash. Why wouldn't we do this? Why wouldn't we create a superhero show out of these two shows and make a team with these characters that we've involved and these actors that we've involved and do something really fun and big and out of control with them?
And all that being said, this is the best episode of Doctor Who I've ever seen. I've seen the comparisons. I shared it with one of my friends from church, and he did the same reaction you did, Corey, and started busting up laughing. And it is in many aspects true. And I haven't really read anything with Rip Hunter in there, but it did seem to me like Arthur Darvill was playing a little bit like Matt Smith's doctor.
I don't know if I
Not,
necessarily
not.
saw Matt Smith's. He's a little too stern. Matt Smith was like super joyful about being Doctor Who. He was excited all the time.
Oh, yeah.
Maybe later on when the Pons ditched, he got into a more dour place. But for a while, Matt Smith, that's why I loved Doctor Who, is I came in with Smith and it was just over the top fun. The moment he saw the vampire fish ladies in that episode, he got all excited, like, you can't see yourself in a mirror? Oh my God, that means yay. And he's loving it. Darvel's close, maybe even closer to a Tenet, where
Yeah.
he's kind of a medium of, okay, I can take things seriously, but at the same time, I'm enjoying the fact that I am a time master and I got a giant time machine that I just stole, and I'm gonna go get all these guys and gather them up and accomplish this thing. But he still also has the fact that his whole start of this is because Vandal Savage in his timeline killed his wife and son, so he's got a
Yeah.
tragedy as well. It is smart to get somebody from the Doctor Who pantheon to play the Doctor Who style character in this show.
And I'm only going to say this right now, just because, hey, there is a time. But he also did star in Broadchurch, so just throwing
Yes.
that out there.
So if we start
You're
accusing him of possibly killing and touching little boys,
that wasn't where I was going with that. It was more of because of the news of the creator of Broadchurch is taking over as showrunner for Doctor Who after the next season.
I like to think of him as the co-showrunner of Torchwood.
There you go. That too. I still have not seen Torchwood, so
One thing I
yeah.
was glad to see is Randall Savage got better. When they showed him in Arrow and Flash, he didn't have that persona, the character that was appealing. But now he was a little bit more menacing. They stepped up the ladder. It could be a little bit more, but he's a decent villain for the.
No, I completely agree. Vandal Savage in the episode with the crossover wasn't menacing enough. You know, you didn't buy into why this guy was so important and what he could accomplish. Now, having an army changes things, and having multiple armies through time definitely changes things. And that respect made him more powerful. Plus, he wasn't the only villain in this. We had Kronos, the time, the Boba Fett. guy
The Darth
running through
Vader.
here. Yeah, well, they call him Boba Fett, which I thought was really
They
funny.
call him Darth Vader too.
Oh, yeah. Both of those things made it a little bit more palatable, but I think obviously what this show is about is seeing these characters that we've been enjoying and in some cases missing from these other programs and get to shine in the spotlight. And the fact that it says, oh, you guys in my time are legends. And later on, it's like, well, not really. You were available. It's kind of like being next to Wolverine. And Wolverine, why'd you get Wolverine? Because he's the best there is at what he does. Well, then who's this other guy? He's affordable.
Yeah. I mean, it was basically a sci-fi version of the Expendables. Why'd you pick them? Because they don't have an impact in the future.
As a comic book reader, three of them were in the Justice League or more. I don't recall. The Hawkgirl and the Hawkman and
Adam.
Adam, yeah.
Adam and Snart.
Yes.
And Snart and Firestorm. Snart's in there now.
Yeah, Snart's not really a Justice League guy, but
he's Luthor's lackey, for lack of a better term.
Right.
And so he does end up doing, like, with when Geoff Johns did the Amazovirus storyline last year, he did play a big part in that with the Justice League.
Yeah, but, it's pretty good. There's also, this is like real comic-y stuff. When Darvel as Rapunner is talking to the other Time Masters, and he's talking about all the different people throughout history who've started like mega wars and stuff, and he mentions Hitler, and I don't remember if he said Mussolini or what, but then he said Perdegaton. Perdegaton is like a straight up back to the Justice Society All-Star Squadron villain. He was like their Red Skull. He was DC's essential Red Skull. He didn't have the look, but he was that era a villain, and he was the kind of like the Reich villain that gathered all these military style German people and stuff. And that was just like that whole moment of like, oh yeah, they mentioned Degaton, which is not a character that I would ever expect to see. It's like seeing the I forget what it's called. There was some creature that put its brain inside a gorilla for a while, and then it put its brain inside a model for a while. It was just weird. But just great comic book stuff.
Yeah. But no,
and
so
the ship
overall
is called Wave Rider.
Yeah.
Wave Rider is also one of the Time Hunters, or the Time Masters. And the fact that they have Gideon in there for the ship was also really cool. It's really cool stuff.
One thing, the show looked brilliant, and put the money where the picture was and everything. But I don't know if they can afford to keep it up like that. Could it be like Supergirl, the first episode showing being great? And then everything else, the CGI being, mediocre, TV.
Except for Martian Manhunter, who looks fantastic.
And the white Martian Manhunter.
Yeah, the white Martians. The one thing that, and I talked about this with my friend Chris and his son Julian, that we took kind of issue with was some of the things that the characters do that are out of character, especially Professor Stein drugging Jax to get him to come along. Now, we talked this out, and Chris made some good points, which is Professor Stein is a little weird, a little off, and he spent a year where he was just kind of like not existing, was dead, living inside the head of another person. It may be that that is something that he would do. It seemed unheroic, and it seemed out of character, but he's a guy who follows science more than he follows heroism and right and wrong. He wants to, you know, here's an opportunity to go through time and see all these things, and to do this, I need you with me. You're going to come with me. But it's for the best. It's for you. It's for the best, too. Don't worry about it. And he does redeem himself by the end of the episode of going to charging in a very human and frail form to save Jax, and they redeem the whole thing of how Jax decides to stick around afterwards, but it was a little off feeling.
Yeah. So overall, how would you guys rate Legends of Tomorrow as opposed to all the other superhero shows that are out there right now?
All the DC superhero, the
In general, all superheroes. So include Agent Carter, include Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. You know, all the comic book super shows that are out there. How would you compare Legends of Tomorrow to them?
Go ahead, Beat.
The best thing about it, it's its own thing. There isn't much out there that's really the same. It's compared to Doctor Who, but that's only by proxy. But
it
has its own tone, and it fits. For the first episode, we'll see if it sticks. But so far, I'm intrigued.
Yeah, the comparison I did hear, and it's what I quoted to my friend, was it's Doctor Who meets the Avengers.
Yeah, I
And
mean, it's
I
definitely an Avengers,
yeah, because it
which is good, but that's
yeah.
the advantage that it has over something like Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., which is supposed to be characters that exist in a world of superheroes but aren't superheroes. And so when they drizzle in a little bit here and there, I think what they do is very good, but obviously that first season had to go through a bunch of hoops to finally get to the point where they could tell the story that they were hoping to tell. The second season with the Inhuman stuff, now they're at a point where maybe they're a little bit closer to this, but it's still, they've got a lot more episodes to try to budget out for, whereas this is a mini series, so it gets it a lot of advantages. I am more interested in this right now than I am Arrow. Probably also more interested in this than I am in Supergirl, just because Supergirl has been really hit or miss on the writing and directing so far, even though I love the idea of the character. The execution of the show overall has been really, I want to like it more. And then Gotham, of course, isn't even consideration.
What show?
Right, exactly.
All right, so I think we'll save it for next week, but save Agent Carter for next week, just because we are going long. So with all that being said, I think we're gonna wrap things up here. You could find us where we record usually on Mondays at 9:30 p.m. Eastern, 6:30 p.m. Western, 2:30 p.m. or 2:30 a.m. British UTC. So you could figure it out for the rest of the world's there. And you could check us out at our webpage at elsers.com. You could like our Facebook group at facebook.elsers.com. You could see full archives of our episodes, including the other shows that we did, 616, Pod Save the Queen, what else is on over at watch.elsers.com. And if you have anything you want to say to us, hey, we welcome criticism. You could message us on Twitter, follow us on Twitter at ElseNerds, and we are and send us mail at ElseNerds.com. And have you heard of the Galactic Netcasts?
Well, of course you have, because we talked about it a little bit earlier.
Well, yeah, this is the because this is where we're gonna be going over there here in the near future. Once we are done ironing out wrinkles, and they have great programming, like the award-winning for filthiest show on the network, asterisk until we get on here, Podcast of Terror. That is one of the shows that's out there, Sci-Fi Geeks Club. And I'm going to say this right now. I was listening to the beginning of this past week's episode of Sci-Fi Geeks Club while I was at work, because I had to be there at 6 in the morning, and I have a story for that for off camera. And I found myself wanting to yell at Brad and the guest that was on there, be like, "Ah, you guys are missing so many other things." And it was the 1 week that Dave didn't go, "Hey, you want to come on?" Because I was on the week before, I believe. And so, yeah. But there's also other great shows like Adventure Party, Weird World Weekly, Who News and Review, like we mentioned, the Exploring the X-Files show. And is there any other one I'm also missing?
The Patreon.
Oh, yeah, the Patreon. And you can support them over at patreon.com/galacticnetcasts. And it's a monthly thing, so you don't have to give too much. They're just helping them help Dave to keep the ship afloat, to where he's not spending money out of his own pocket to keep the ship going and all that stuff. And just $1 a month is all we're asking here. I mean, that's a quarter a week and all that. So for all that, I think that's all that stuff to sit me said. All that stuff to say is this has been a Don't Tell Glenn production, and we will see you guys next time.
Thank you, everybody. Sniffles.
Bye.
Oh.